Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, March 26, 2025, on 91.7 FM WHUS Storrs. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So, just as an interesting by the by, I happen to get a natural toothpaste that has prebiotic in it. I have the other toothpaste that has probiotic in it that I use as a leave-on, but I happen to have some tea tree oil prebiotic toothpaste that probably has inulin or something in it that will help to feed the bacteria that I'm putting in with the probiotic toothpaste. So there's so many things you can find. For your dental health, you're looking at calcium hydroxyapatite, stuff for your gums like coenzyme Q10, prebiotic to feed the good probiotic in your mouth, probiotic to live in your mouth so that they fight with the strep mutans that gives you tooth decay, and then, you know, antimicrobial herbs, things like neem, which is strengthening to your gums as well as antimicrobial, and tea tree oil, which is antimicrobial as well. There's some other good substances too. Green tea actually helps you to have less cavities, whether you drink it or it's an ingredient in a toothpaste. So, because it has a lot of antioxidants in it. And grapeseed extract can be helpful as well. That's tooth stuff. I just happened to notice that. This is the first time I've been on Radio Naturopath with Ron after the Know Your Farmer Fair. So I know you're probably listening to this a couple weeks later, but I wanted to get Ron's perspective on the Know Your Farmer Fair, because he did some stuff that I mostly went shopping and said hello to people. But what did you do?
I said hello to people.
Yeah, you said hello to people.
I did.
Okay.
And scouted out some of the farms. We found a supplier that can probably help us out for the Farm to Families program. Yeah, a couple of them, definitely. A couple of different people that will help us out, because I also work for the Town of Mansfield Farm to Families program.
Right.
So I'm, it was good. It was good. It's a great event. There's like 35 vendors there, and they're mainly small farms.
Yeah.
Which is really nice.
And then you're supporting...
We have lots and lots of small farms in northeastern Connecticut.
And you also saw Joe Courtney.
And I saw Joe Courtney.
Yes, Joe Courtney. I really appreciate it. I just love it when our federal congress people show up for stuff.
Yeah.
So we get to see Joe Courtney. We get to see Blumenthal. The only one I haven't met yet is Chris Murphy.
Yeah, I don't know that I've met him yet. I don't think I have.
I bet Mae Flexer was there yesterday. I didn't see her.
Yeah, I didn't see her.
But
either.
She comes to everything.
Well, she lives in town.
Yeah, she comes. She right came there, to the Polar Plunge for the Covenant Soup Kitchen.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, I see her so much.
Yeah. Well, Willimantic is kind of a hub for the area.
Yeah.
You know, so it tends to draw a lot of attention because of that.
Yeah. That's smart for her to show up.
It's also a financially challenging hub in eastern Connecticut.
Yeah. But they keep, if you look at Main Street Willimantic, they keep trying new businesses.
Yeah, there's a lot of things going
right,
on.
Right, I know. Yeah. There's the egg and cheese, and there's going to be an ice cream shop next to the egg and cheese. And two doors down, there's a boba place. And then there's the coffee place across the street. And then there's the other coffee place down the road.
Willimantic is, it's happening. And if anyone ever gets it together to put that bike path in, the protected bike path down Main Street, instead of having it hidden in the backwoods of the back alleys of Willimantic, they could actually get even more business from
right.
it.
Right. That would be so exciting if people just kind of came down Main
it's
Street
not for
and
a lack
could see
of
all
asking.
The businesses.
I did see right. the mayor. I did see the mayor there.
Because if you were riding a bike, you might be inclined by people. They actually do. They come into Willimantic and they go to the brew pub and they go to grind a coffee and they go get a cupcake. And the donut place was there, they used to get donuts, but the donut place left and was replaced by the egg and cheese place.
But there's other things you can get in town.
Yeah.
Yeah, we probably need to try to focus even more rides around Willimantic for our bike riding club.
Yeah.
You know, that would be good to try to put together some different routes
that show up in that use Willimantic as a rest stop.
Yeah.
I mean, the Willimantic Food Co-op makes a good rest stop because it has it bathrooms and many kinds of foods and treats. I mean, you could get kombucha, you could get juice, you could get hot stuff. Coffee, you could get cold coffee. You can get a piece of fruit. You can get a vegetable. There's so many things that you could get.
It's a grocery store, really.
It's a grocery store. Right. And it also has tables to sit, which is nice. And then you can schmooze with people.
Right.
Yes, so it's very good. So Know Your Farmer Fair was a success. All right. And how are you feeling?
How am I feeling?
Yeah.
You know, okay. Okay.
Still, are you any progress?
There's an occasional spark here and there.
Yeah,
but
that's good.
I would say not the progress I'm looking for.
So soon you're going to see the neurologist.
That's coming up towards the end of this month.
And you're hoping to get an MRI.
It's coming up this week. I'm going to be talking to my PCP about...
What date is your visit with the PCP?
I have to look it up. I'm not sure.
Because it's Purim this week, and you're going to see Dr. Heyman.
We did this last year. You talked about this last year.
Yeah,
also.
Right. Yes, because Heyman is the villain in the story of Purim, and I sent Ron to his last year's visit with a Hamantaschen, and he burst out laughing, and he knew exactly why, and he assured Ron that he was not an evil man and had no interest in exterminating the Jews. So
it's a good thing.
We still gave him a Hamantaschen anyway, because they're delicious. Yeah, so if you're curious about the story of Purim, the story of Purim is an apocryphal book. It's not exactly part of the Bible. It's a later story. It's the Megillah, the book of Esther. And it's a story of how it has a lot of intrigue and all kinds of cool stuff. But ultimately, Queen Esther gets pushed to be the new queen of Persia, along with Xerxes, who's known as Ahasuerus in Hebrew or in Aramaic. And she winds up having a party that winds up saving the Jews. And the villain that wants to kill them all, his name is Haman. And so into part of the celebration of Purim. So the way that Purim is celebrated is it's pretty much celebrated like Mardi Gras. It's a big drunk. You're supposed to get so drunk that you can't tell the difference between Haman and Mordecai. And you dress up. You can dress up as the story, as the characters of the story. Or you can dress up as anything. You can dress up as a superhero. You can dress up as a flower. It doesn't matter. You can dress up however you want. My rabbi this year dressed up as a Scottish person with a kilt. And he usually dresses up with something funny every year. And I'm disappointed because I didn't get to go to the Purim celebration because it was on a Thursday night when I'm at work. So when it's not on a work night, it's not on a day that I have already worked, I tend to go to that celebration. And the last couple of years I've been able to go because it's been on a Sunday night or a Wednesday night or a Monday night, on a night that I could get there. So unless I get out early on Thursday, I won't be able to go. But I'm going to try to get myself some Hamantaschen or at least eat some prune butter because my favorite flavors of these cookies. So they make these cookies called Hamantaschen, and supposedly Haman wore a tri-corner hat. It was triangular. And so you make these little dough-shaped cookies with a pocket to put filling in. And the dough can be just you usually make them parva so you can have them after supper. So you have to put some kind of fat in them that is not dairy. So you'd have to put coconut oil in them or I'm not sure how they make the dough, but you have to put something in them that's not dairy. And then you make a little pocket, and they have a spot for filling. And the most traditional Eastern European filling is prune and moon. And prune is, of course, prune, because Poland, Eastern Europe, right? At Poland and Ukraine, we ate a lot of prunes there. And moon is poppy seed. It's a poppy seed paste, and I think it's delicious. But you can traditionally, they also often come with raspberry filling or apricot filling. And then people get really creative. They make the dough with chocolate or caramel, and they fill the center with chocolate cream or caramel or any fruit you can imagine, or pistachio or honey. So you can get really creative with them. But the traditional Eastern European is prune and moon. And then off of that, raspberry and apricot. So if you go to Ryan's Deli, you can get them already made, and you can order them online, and you can go to any bakery that is in tune with Jewish stuff this time of year will make hamantaschen. You can order gluten-free hamantaschen online, and someday when I have more time, I will make gluten-free hamantaschen at home and fill them with all kinds of cool stuff. But I think this year we're going to shop. Yesterday, I made muffins, and they were so simple, and they were really good. Were the muffins good?
They were good.
Good muffins. Okay, they were super simple muffins. They were, by default, gluten-free. The ingredients were almond flour, which is just ground almonds. So it's almond flour, oats, like actual oatmeal, flax seeds, and then you stick them together with eggs and baking soda to help them rise, a little bit of coconut oil. And then you can add all kinds of things to them. And I put in cranberries and blueberries. I think next time I'm going to throw in some seeds, more seeds. I'm going to put in pumpkin and sunflower seeds. So you can make them any way you want. And the only sweetener I put in a batch of 11, I wound up making 11 muffins. I was able to fill 11 muffin cups with this recipe. And so you can make 6 great big muffins or 11 small ones. So or 12, or maybe a dozen small ones. And I think they said 8, but I made 12 because I filled it most of the way, all the muffin cups part way. And they came out a good size. And so I got 11 out of that. And I wonder if I put more stuff in them, would I have got with it, stretch it out a little more if I put in more seeds and stuff. So we'll see next time. But they're so simple. The only sweetener in all those 11 muffins was 1/4 cup of maple syrup. So they're not super sweet, which is nice because then you can throw butter on them. You can throw jam on them. You can throw nut butter on them. And they were nice and moist and chewy and really good. And I used 2 eggs for the whole batch. And if you don't want to use eggs because, you know, egg shortage and all, you can make you can use your flax eggs. And the flax eggs are, the ratio is 1 tablespoon of water to 3 tablespoons of ground flax seeds. And no, I'm sorry, it's the other way around. It's 1 tablespoon of ground flax seeds to 3 tablespoons of water. And you let them sit in the fridge for a couple of hours, and then you get mush. And it will make it'll make your batter softer. So I didn't do that this time. I used the eggs, and I'm gonna make sunflower butter based cookies, flourless sunflower butter cookies, and I'm gonna use flax eggs for that when I do that. So anyway, so it was nice. So we had a nice weekend. All right, so let's talk about some health stuff. So let's go to see what Dr. Axe has to say about osteoarthritis, because we started on that a few weeks ago, and then we got onto other topics. And so let me see what we want to talk about. So we were up to taking proteolytic enzymes. So proteolytic enzymes are enzyme. Proteolytic means, so proteo means protein, and lytic means something that breaks, from the word lysis, which means it's a noun that means something's breaking up in Greek, and then lytic is something that's an adjective that describes a suffix that you use to say, all right, it's breaking down this stuff. So a proteolytic enzyme breaks down protein. A carbolytic enzyme or a glycolytic enzyme would be breaking down sugars or starches, and a lipolytic enzyme would be breaking down fats. But a proteolytic enzyme helps your digestion. It breaks down enzymes that are normally produced by your digestive organs to metabolize foods. So enzymes include trypsin and chymotrypsin. And I don't know if you remember, I talked about back when I was dealing with post-vaccine syndrome, one of the things that somebody figured out was that the blood clots, the microclots of COVID and the COVID vaccine can be broken down by trypsin. So I found an enzyme, just a proteolytic enzyme, you know, a digestive enzyme that happened to have trypsin in it, and I took it for a while. And over time, I had an elevated D-dimer, which is an indicator of elevated clotting activity. And I took the proteolytic enzyme that had the trypsin in it for many months, and then my D-dimer was gone. It's normal now, so thank goodness. So proteolytic enzymes are got, you can get them from tropical fruits like papaya, which has papain, and pineapples that have bromelain. And be careful with bromelain. A lot of people can take bromelain, no problem. I can't. It gives me a stomach ache, gives me heartburn. And some people, that's what happens to them. And some people are just fine with it. But I was able to take the proteolytic enzymes that didn't have bromelain in them and did have the trypsin. They just had some basic protease enzymes in them. So proteolytic enzymes are anti-inflammatory because they can help your overall gut health and help with immunity. So you're going to, if you take proteolytic enzymes, you're going to break down your proteins better and absorb them better. They can help with immunity because they can break down your inflammatory compounds are proteins. So when you break down the inflammatory compounds with proteolytic enzymes, you have less inflammation. So there is research that shows they can decrease the swelling and pain associated with rheumatoid arthritis and increase mobility with osteoarthritis, and also fight infections by controlling inflammatory responses. So you have all these inflammatory compounds, and they calm that stuff down. So I was taking proteolytic enzymes for a while. I'm not now. Generally, when you take proteolytic enzymes, you want to take them away from eating protein. You want to have an empty stomach and wait at least half an hour before you eat. So that means you have to mostly have an empty stomach. So generally that's 2 hours after you've eaten, but not always. I mean, I know that my stomach, if I've had a decent meal that has protein in it, my stomach isn't completely empty 2 hours after I've eaten, but it is empty in the morning and several hours after I've eaten. But you're going to get the best results if your stomach is empty. And then you wait half an hour before you eat. And the reason is you want to absorb the proteolytic enzymes into your bloodstream. And so once they're in your bloodstream, they can run around to your whole body and find the inflammatory compounds and break them down. If you eat your proteolytic enzymes with food, especially protein going down, they're going to see the protein right there, and they're going to help you digest your food. So you could do it at both times if you want to, but you're not going to get the anti-inflammatory effect. You're just going to get the digestive effect. All right. So the other thing you can do is eat ginger and turmeric. These are good things for you to eat all the time anyway. So ginger has pain relieving compounds in it, and also compounds that reduce inflammation. Ginger has been researched to lessen pain that comes with arthritis and improve your digestive and gut health. There was a report in the Journal of Medicinal Foods that ginger extract derived from the ginger plant, and also Alpinia galanga, which is another species that's similar to ginger, that's commonly used. Like if you go to a Thai restaurant, you'll get dishes that have galangal in it. And so that's also been shown to be anti-inflammatory. And it induces genes that are involved in the inflammatory response and calms it down. And that's genes that encode cytokines. Cytokines are common inflammatory compounds in your body. Chemokines, which stimulate inflammatory compounds, and cyclooxygenase, which is the enzyme that aspirin breaks down. So there's more than 100 active compounds isolated from turmeric. There are special substances found in its volatile oils, like turmerone, curcumin, dimethoxycurcumin, 5-methoxycurcumin, and dihydrocurcumin. So there's a lot of curcuminoids in curcumin. And the most active ingredient is curcumin, which is known to be one of the most powerful natural anti-inflammatories there is. So I take curcumin every day. So I got my inflammation under control, mostly, I guess. So the antiarthritic effects of turmeric include inhibition of joint inflammation, reduction in edema and swelling, and slowed joint destruction. So good, because I have this arthritis going on and I'm taking the curcumin. I have to remember that taking curcumin is really important. It's been researched in many, many studies investigating pain-killing effects and helping with all kinds of inflammatory conditions. And there was a study at the Nirmala Center in India that investigated the effects of turmeric, because in India they eat a lot of turmeric, more than here in the United States, although Ron and I eat turmeric regularly in our food. I mean, I think last week we had fish with turmeric on it. We could do that. We have curry anything tonight if you like.
Okay.
Okay. So we'll probably have curry chicken salad tonight, I'm guessing.
Probably will.
Yeah, because it's easy to make and the chicken's already made. So the effects of turmeric were studied compared to the drugs that people usually get with rheumatoid arthritis, like diclofenac, or a combination of both. The curcumin group showed the highest percentage of improvement, better than the patients who took diclofenac and with no negative side effects. So that's really nice. And the only time you're going to get negative side effects from curcumin is if you're sensitive to it. If you overdo curcumin, you can overstimulate it because it is a liver tonic and it is a cholagogue, which means it will stimulate the, it's a cholagogue and a choleretic, which means it's going to make you make bile and also push bile through your liver. So if you overdo it and you have gallstones, that could be a problem. If you have any kind of biliary stones, it can help to push them along. If you don't have them and you take curcumin regularly, you're less likely to get them. It does help with, so it does help with your liver health. And it's a terrific antioxidant as well. So it helps with healthy gene expression all over your body. It's protective. It's been studied to be protective against a lot of kinds of cancer. Now, when I say protective, that doesn't mean you're definitely not going to get cancer. It just means that you're less likely to. So, all right. And then there's Boswellia, also known as frankincense. And so frankincense, Boswellia, can be found in concentrated forms. There's a therapeutic grade oil that you can massage over skin areas. And I have a nice salve that I keep forgetting to use at night. And it's got, I don't like to use it during the day because it's greasy, because all it is coconut oil, frankincense, and turmeric. That's all that's in it. And it's really nice, and it feels nice. Like if I would put it on my knees at night, my knees would probably appreciate it. So I got to put on my turmeric Boswellia salve anyway. So in the Indian Journal of Pharmaceutical Science, Boswellia and frankincense oil can reduce arthritis pain through several mechanisms, including overall immune function. It interferes with cytokine production, which raises inflammation, and it delays reactions to sensitivities, and it helps lymphocytes to be regulated in T-cell interactions and reduces immune effects. Now, the unfortunate thing with me and frankincense is I can put it on myself, but I can't ingest it because it gives me a stomachache. So I can't do bromelain, I can't do Boswellia. It's okay because I can do lots of other anti-inflammatory things. So you can combine a few drops of pure frankincense oil with a carrier oil like coconut oil, which is what I do, and apply to your painful joint a few times a day. And there are other beneficial essential oils for arthritis that you can put on topically. They include myrrh, turmeric, ginger, orange, lavender, and peppermint. These are all lovely things that smell good. Then there's comfrey. I like to have comfrey in topicals as well. And sometimes I get plain comfrey oil, and that will be my thing to apply. It can help with pain. It's a great addition to any other topical treatment. And there are a bunch of studies in Australia that show it as something helpful for osteoarthritis. They found that comfrey extract gel improves pain. And in the Journal of Chiropractic Medicine, they had a study where they examined male and female patients who were diagnosed with osteoarthritis of the knee and put them in one of three groups, and 10 or 20% comfrey root or a placebo. And the participants applied cream three times a day and were evaluated every 2 weeks. And both active topical formulations were effective in relieving pain and stiffness and in improving physical function and superior to placebo. All right, so that's it. My next, daily massage thing is going to be, I'm going to get some more comfrey oil or comfrey salve. So did you know that arthritis is the number one cause of disability in the U.S.? Did you know that?
No.
Mm-hmm. About 50% of adults living in the U.S. who are over the age of 65 now report receiving a diagnosis of arthritis from their doctors. I'm under the age of 65 and I have received that diagnosis. Arthritis doesn't just impact the older groups of Americans either. There's about 300,000 babies and children who have arthritis or rheumatic condition. And 2/3 of people with arthritis are under the age of 65. That's me. All right. It's now estimated that about by 2030, there will be 67 million Americans over the age of 18 suffering with arthritis. My goodness. Okay. Arthritis, which especially osteoarthritis, is more common among women. Interesting. I'm going to guess that's because men having testosterone, it maintains the integrity of their joints a little bit better because testosterone is probably, of the reproductive hormones, it's the most anabolic. It's the most proliferative. It's more proliferative than estrogen. And it imparts toughness to muscles and ligaments. Now, women have testosterone. We just don't have as much as men. And men also have estrogen. They just don't have as much as women. So among adults with arthritis, about 47% of them have at least one other disease or condition like heart disease, diabetes, obesity, anxiety, depression, gout, or high blood pressure. And the thing is, when you have osteoarthritis, it makes it harder for you to exercise and move and do the things that you want to get done. So osteoarthritis can be debilitating, not just directly, but indirectly, because you can't. Makes it harder to do the other things that you need to do to live your life. So arthritis among children is also a reality. In juvenile arthritis, there's like 300,000 children under the age of 18 who have it. And there's juvenile idiopathic arthritis, and they don't know why. There's several other forms of arthritis affecting children that's classified as an autoimmune disorder. They think that juvenile arthritis is something in a child's genes, that it is genetic and makes the child more likely to get arthritis, and might even be a virus that sets it off. The most common symptoms of juvenile arthritis include the swelling of joints, pain along with stiffness that doesn't dissipate, and juvenile arthritis affects the knees, hands, and feet, and it's worse after a night's rest or nap. So one of the things I want to remind you, if you have arthritis, especially at a weird time in your life, if you're a young person and all of a sudden you come down with arthritis, please get assessed for tick-borne illness, especially if you're in New England, but depending where you are. If you're in a region of the country where Lyme disease and other tick-borne illnesses are common, New England, definitely. There's been Lyme disease found in all states of the Union. It is less likely to happen the further south you go, and we figured out one of the reasons for that is that ticks need to be moist, and in places where there's high heat, even if it's a moist heat, if you're sitting out in the sun, you tend to get dried out. So if you're in the South, you're in South Carolina or something, or definitely in Florida, if there are ticks there, when it's really hot out, they're going to be burrowed under foliage, and they're going to be burrowed under leaf debris, and they're not going to come out as much. So that's why you don't see Lyme disease as much where it's hot, and you're definitely not going to see it nearly as much in desert areas, because once again, ticks need moisture. As I've said before, if you took a tick and you put it on a table and let it just sit there, it would die. Ticks dry out easily, and if they don't have moisture, they will die. So in New England, we have a lot of moisture. We have a lot of leaves down. We have a lot of moist grass. We have a lot of moisture that sits in all our wonderful foliage. And so it's a great place for the ticks to multiply. And that's unfortunate. So please, if you have osteoarthritis, and I like to check people anyway, if they have osteoarthritis, regardless of their age, if you're in this part of the country, I like to know what your tick-borne illness status is. And I might do it in terms of, like, the first thing I would do is check blood work by the traditional labs that you go to. And then if it didn't come up, I would consider having a test by a more specialized lab that is more likely to find things, just because they check more bands, they check more antibody bands, and they check more bands that are specific for Lyme disease. Okay, so arthritis among children. So especially if a child gets arthritis, you want to know, kids play outside. We're less likely to play outside, which is unfortunate. I would like it if adults played outside more. So if you're going to play outside, wear tick repellent of some kind. If I'm going to be lying in the grass, like I like to do yoga in my yard, I'm now nervous to do yoga in my yard because I'm afraid of ticks. But generally, I make myself stink with this wonderful tick repellent spray, and Ron just loves the smell of it. Not.
Gross.
It is, yes, he says it is gross. So I have to, I use the tick repellent, and then what I try to do is wash it off when I come inside. And that way I can do my yoga in the backyard, which I enjoy doing because it's lovely out. And in a few weeks, I'll be able to do that again. It was certainly bright enough and sunny enough to do it last night, but I think it was, 40 degrees or 30 degrees at 5 o'clock last night. So that didn't work. All right. So warning signs and symptoms of arthritis. The first one is, of course, joint pain, which can vary in intensity from person to person, depending on the location. And it might come and go depending on other lifestyle factors. By the way, if joint pain comes and goes and travels, that is a classic sign of Lyme disease. Signs of inflammation can include swelling. You might be able to notice swelling and fluid retention through your skin over the affected joints. They can also become red, warm, and tender, which are signs of swelling. Joints can become stiff, and they tend to be worse when standing, lying, or sitting for long periods. And you can get, of course, a decreased range of motion and loss of flexibility. One of the things that I find, too, so this is interesting. I was at Dr. LaGuardia's office the other day, and there were two other ladies sitting in the waiting room with me. And Dr. LaGuardia has a TV screen running, and it has all kinds of nice health information, and it's basic health information. It's like, it says cool things like eat more produce. Here's some suggestions for fruits and vegetables that you can eat. Get outside, spend time outdoors, get exercise. And this
might be a Harvard healthcare thing.
Maybe it might be. And it's a big TV screen, and it's running while you're sitting. So you can sit and enjoy this. Here's some health effects. And I made a comment to the other ladies that it's a really good idea to get outside, because they're saying it's a good idea to get outside. But make sure you, and then actually talked about grounding, that going walking barefoot in the grass and lying in the grass is good for you. So I said, yeah, that's a great thing to do, but make sure you wear tick repellent if you lie down in the grass. But lying in the grass is good for you. And I said something like that. One of the ladies said, yeah, but if you can get up after you do. So that was really interesting, because I don't think about, for me, Fran, worrying about getting up out of a lying position, because I practice getting up and down all the time because I do yoga. But that's totally a thing, isn't it?
Especially if you teach silver sneakers classes and you have a lot of elderly people in your classes, you
don't get on the ground.
They don't. Well, first of all, silver sneakers in general, when you're trained to teach those classes, they say no floor work. That is chair oriented.
Right, standing in chair.
So standing in chair is fine, but on the floor is a problem. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to be doing another clinic this week, probably towards the end of the on my end of the week class.
You are?
Which is going to show them how to get off the floor once you've fallen on the floor.
Right.
Because that's an issue.
Because people fall. That's an
issue. People fall. And the number one 911 call, number one, is
I've fallen and I can't get up.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so there's two things that I talk to my seniors about when I'm teaching classes. I talk to them about that being the number one thing. And one of the key moments that will bring you to that point is dehydration.
Right. Because so drink.
People don't drink enough, especially when they get older. Right. They try not to drink too much because then they have to run to the bathroom all the time because they tend to have, troubles with that. So,
they don't move fast, so they can't always make it there.
Right.
So they tend to water starve.
So one of the things I do in my balance class is I do a, step forward like you're going somewhere really quickly, or step off to the side like you're going. Yeah. So, because that's the immediate thing that happens. And the people that I've talked to that are on the ambulance crew, they say that people say, I don't know what happened. I was just getting up out of my chair and I fell.
Right.
Because they get up real quick, they're dehydrated, they're lightheaded.
Right.
And then they lose their balance and they fall.
And they fall, right.
And then they're in trouble.
It's so important to drink.
So I go over this stuff like every week.
And a lot of people, the older they get, they tend to be on medications that are dehydrating.
Yeah, that's another point I hadn't even thought
about. Yes, absolutely. Well, there's so many blood... many blood pressure medicines make you dehydrated. If you're on... People think, oh, I'm not on a diuretic, so that doesn't make me dehydrated. Mm. Wrong. So actual diuretics like triamterene and hydrochlorothiazide are diuretic. They're actually direct diuretics. The mechanism of action is to make you go to the bathroom more, to lower your blood volume so your blood pressure goes down. Yep. But your ACE inhibitors and your ARBs. So your ACE inhibitors are any of the drugs that end in pril, like lisinopril and benazepril and captopril. Anything that ends in pril is an ACE inhibitor. An ACE inhibitor, the ultimate mechanism of action is to slow down the renin-angiotensin pathway so that you lose sodium and therefore you lose water. Likewise, the ARBs, that's any of the drugs that end in sartan. So I'm not going to list all of them because there's a lot of them, but there's losartan, valsartan, olmesartan, irbesartan, candesartan, and there's a bunch more that ends in sartan. It's an ARB, an angiotensin receptor blocker, also works in that pathway. The ultimate end of that pathway is blocking your aldosterone production so that you lose more salt and you lose more water. And that makes you dehydrated. So I take an ACE inhibitor. And when I was acclimating to the ACE inhibitor, I was getting more lightheaded. And if I don't pay attention to my hydration, I will get lightheaded. Which is why most of my glasses of water now, if you're watching me on Facebook Live or YouTube or Instagram, you can see I have a glass of water. This glass of water has electrolytes in it. So I drink electrolytes. And because I'm drinking electrolytes all day, these electrolytes have no carbohydrate in them. They are flavored and they're sweetened with stevia, but they have electrolytes in them. You can get electrolytes that are completely unflavored. They're just basically seawater and trace minerals. And they have no flavoring. So if you want to flavor them, you squeeze in a little fruit or you throw in a splash of fruit juice. So that's one option. Another option is to get no carbohydrate flavored electrolytes that are lightly sweetened and have electrolytes in them. And then if you're using them for a workout, then you get electrolytes that do have carbohydrates in them. So I wouldn't recommend the carbohydrate one for, I'm just sitting here drinking and I don't want to get dehydrated. And if you're sitting and talking, when you sit and talk, you get dehydrated because you're breathing out aerosol. So you lose water that way. Your mouth will start to feel dry, which is why when I'm at work and when I'm here on Radio Naturopath, I always have a glass of water. And I worked out this morning. I did some sweaty exercise this morning, so most of the day I'm definitely going to have electrolytes in my water. And my choice throughout the day. So when I'm actually working out, I'm okay with having electrolytes that have some carb in them. And sometimes I don't, and I'll have the carbohydrates in food that I am eating. But throughout the day, I want my electrolytes to not have any carb. They taste like they have carbohydrates in them. And so that's something to be aware of. So shout out to Eric, what was his name? My friend Eric, Evan. I'm sorry, Evan Johnson. Remember Evan Johnson?
Right. Yeah.
Evan Johnson, who's
in San Diego.
He's a PhD in exercise physiology, either exercise physiology or kinesiology. I forget which. But his motto is hydrate or die, and he did studies on the importance of hydration and how much better athletes perform when they are well hydrated. And he talks about the studies that show that when you can taste carbohydrate in water, you're more likely to drink it. So I have patients who they say, I don't like the taste of water. And I wonder if they are just drinking water that doesn't taste good. Like if you have mold in your pipes, the water's going to tend to taste moldy. Or if you have city water, the water's not going to tend to taste good because it's going to have chlorine in it. Now, our water in our house tastes very good because it's from a 200-foot well. Our pipes must be reasonably clean, so the water all by itself tastes very good. And so I don't have a problem drinking it. But So there are some people who just don't like the taste of water, and then there are people who forget to drink water. And I know that for me, sometimes if I drink water, if it has no flavor in it, I'll drink a sip and then I'll put it down. And I notice that I will be more likely to drink it for me if it's cold and if I do taste some carbohydrate in it. So because I don't want calories all day in my water, I do this the electrolytes with stevia in it and some fruit flavoring. And that works for me. Or, you know, I'll drink seltzer water that has a little flavoring in it and maybe some fruit, more fruit squeezed into it. So even though I like the taste of water, I find that I'll drink more of it if it's flavored. And so whatever gets you to drink it more, if you're drinking it with a lot of sugar in it, that's not good for you because that's going to raise your blood sugar. It's unnecessarily calories and it's going to, and it's bad for your teeth if you're sipping on it all day. So anyway, so electrolytes can be really helpful. And if you're older, and the thing is, when you drink electrolyte water, it's going to be less likely to go right through you. You're going to absorb it more in places that you need to. And I find that if I haven't been drinking, if I haven't had anything to drink in a little while, and then I drink it, all of a sudden I feel a lot better. And then temperature, the best temperature to drink water at, number one, is the one that you prefer it at. And number two, there are some studies that show that if it's colder, your body's going to assimilate it faster because your body works to warm the water up and then absorb it. So if it's on the colder side, if it's too cold and you drink it too fast, you could get cramps. You can get cramping in your stomach because anytime you put cold on you, you can get some cramping happening. But cold water at a temperature that's cold enough for you to handle is going to be faster absorbed than if it's warmer. And now with things like caffeine, I haven't done the research on this. I know that if I drink the same amount of caffeine, if I have cold brew versus hot coffee, I will get much more of a zip from the hot coffee than the cold coffee. Do you find that that's true? Or do you not notice really a difference? Sure. You don't notice really a difference because you don't absorb caffeine. I mean, you metabolize caffeine so fast, it doesn't matter. And I am a caffeine canary in a coal mine. Just like Ron is a gluten canary in a coal mine. So hydration is super important. And I thought that's just so interesting that I forget that as people get older, getting up out of a chair or getting up. I have a great big beanbag chair in my office and I have patients who look at it and go, that would be really comfortable, but I'd have trouble getting up out of it. So Ron and I have to talk about whether we want to move the beanbag chair out of the office because it's just not really getting used. I thought I would use it more and I really don't. So anyway, it was nice to have. It was a nice thought for a while. So arthritis, the most common symptoms of arthritis, and I will tell you this from experience, are stiffness and pain. And especially with osteoarthritis, which can cause, you tend to be more stiff when you wake up in the morning and you feel better when you're moving around. So if you have arthritis, your joints are going to feel stiff and harder to move. When and how long they feel stiff will help your doctor determine what type you have. So they'll ask you questions like, how long does the stiffness last in the morning? Do you get stiff following exercise? Do you get stiff after you've been sitting for a while? Also, after exercising. So I definitely get stiff after I've been sitting for a while and I'm kind of stiff first thing in the morning. I have to stretch. Some joints are more commonly impacted by osteoarthritis because you use them so much. So one of them is the lower back, no kidding, the hips, the knees, the feet, the neck, your fingers and the base of your thumb. And this basilar joint in your thumb tends to get a lot of attention when you're, especially when you're peri and postmenopausal. I've had women use progesterone and even using a little progesterone cream and rubbing it right at that spot and it takes care of it. It's really interesting. So if you have osteoarthritis in one of those places, you can have difficulty with walking, climbing stairs, lifting objects, grasping or holding objects, doing intricate detailed work like knitting or needlepoint, which is very disappointing when people get older because they like to do those things. Squatting. I have to be careful with squatting. I can do malasana, which is a yogi squat, but I might pay for it later. So I'm gently trying to get myself back into it. But if you want to do a yogi squat and you do have arthritis in your knees, you can still get most of the benefits by sitting on a block. So I'll set up a block at its highest height. And I bought some really stiff blocks. I found these yoga blocks that are made from oak cork, volcanic oak cork. And they're heavy. And because I had another couple that were probably made of some kind of synthetic foam. And I would sit on them and they would bend. So I said, all right, it's time to get some denser blocks. So I got some denser synthetic blocks, and then I got these cork blocks. The cork blocks are heavy, and so they're not going anywhere. And that'd be a great thing, like if I was going to do a yogi squat, for me to sit on, because I'll get asked to do yogi squats. The other one is Skandasana, where you're bending your knee all the way to one side, and on the right side I can't go down. I mean, I can, but my knee will be very unhappy if I do that. So I don't tend to go down all the way on Skandasana anymore, which is a bummer. Also when you're asked to do crow, which I still can't possibly, Ron can do it because he's got the upper arm strength, but I can't do crow and side crow. We get asked to do that in some of my classes and I'm like, who do you think you're teaching? you know, well, ever at Samadhi, they don't ask you to do crow, but sometimes they do at Yono, and I can't do that. And it's okay. So I do what I do when I do crow, which is what you're supposed to do, is I use props. And it's just as cool to use a prop as not. You're not better or more advanced. And I have wonderful yoga teachers who say, look, you're not better or more advanced or more ascended if you can do a harder version of a pose. And in fact, I tell people that it is the right thing to do the pose in the way that you can do it. So if you need a prop, use the prop, because it will help you to express the pose and be it in a way that's good for your body. So definitely use props. It's like with Ron, you know, Silver Sneakers has this rule: we don't get on the floor. Because, you know, it's hard for those people to get up. So we do it in a way that's accessible to them, and then they feel successful, and then they do get results. Although you are going to have a clinic on getting up off the floor. Are you going to make them get down on the floor and then help them get up?
No, I'm just going to show them how to do it.
Oh, all right.
Because I'm not supposed to put them on the floor.
Okay. Can they get on the floor if they choose to get on the floor? Or do you have to tell them, don't do that?
I'm really not supposed to go there. With that.
Right.
With that.
What class. If somebody says, but I want to try it?
If someone wants to try it, I'll talk to them about coming upstairs after class and we'll get a mat.
Gotcha. So
we'll
you don't want to do it out in the class. Gotcha.
Not in the class.
So that you can be one-on-one and support them.
And maybe I'll just bring a mat downstairs just to, you know, put it out on the floor to show them. But
right.
For myself.
But, yeah.
And then they could do that afterwards.
Boy, you really forget about that. And that's
it just
so
becomes
important.
A really big thing. A lot of people just don't have the strength.
I just want to say to you, if you do basic vinyasa yoga, sun salutations, where you're rising up and you get down and you come up halfway and then you forward fold and then you kick your legs out and do a plank and then you come down on your belly for a chaturanga and then you lift up and do a bend, then you go into down dog and then you stand back up. If you practice that regularly, you're going to be able to get up and down off the floor.
It's true. And I talked to them about their core, and
we do
forward folds from the chair.
Right.
So we fold forward. And then I make them stick their hands out like zombies.
Yes, right.
You know, and then because that counterbalances your weight a little bit.
Yeah.
And up you go.
Yes.
And when I'm doing my my strength and balance class, we do probably 10 of those in the class.
That's good. So they're working their core.
So I'm working their core.
In a functional way.
And they all go, wow, my legs really hurt. And it's like, yeah, well, your legs going to hurt tomorrow. If you wake up tomorrow morning, your legs hurt. It's my fault.
And stretch.
And, you know, you can stretch. And you can do this and you can do that. But anyway, you know, I just always tell them, if you don't feel good after this, it's all my fault. you didn't show up here to do this, you know.
Oh,
I give them a hard time.
Give them a hard time.
They like me.
They do, like me. I know. I try to send people to you. Yeah. So, all right. So, and I do have some of my patients come see you.
Yeah, some of them do.
They're in your classes.
One of those hasn't been for probably 3 or 4 weeks now.
No.
Yeah. Okay. And we're not going to mention her name.
No,
but you should tell her if you see her.
Okay, you'll tell me who later.
Get her butt back in.
So, you know that there can be complications from arthritis, like fluid accumulation in the joint, and hyaluronan, which is like from hyaluronic acid, can decline, which means that the joints are less protected from the effects of shock and pressure, and common complications with arthritis are free-floating bone and cartilage within the joint fluid, which causes irritation and bone spurs. I have that in my right knee joint. They saw that on the x-ray. Less common of long-standing severe rheumatoid arthritis is rheumatoid vasculitis, which occurs in about 1% of the patient populations, and then you have to see a rheumatologist. So you can be genetically susceptible to arthritis. It runs in families. Family history isn't a guarantee that you'll develop it, and that if you have HLA-27, that's the most heterogeneous, and most diseases are with arthritis are from that region. And I think I might have had my HLA-B27 tested, and I don't think I had it. So collagen is important for making cartilage, so slowed production can lead to faster joint deterioration. And you might have genes that result in malformations of bones and joints leading to uneven cartilage. And I have not these. I have genu valgus, which probably my legs are not straight, so that led to wear and tear on those joints. If you weigh too much or you're obese, it increases your risk because excess weight puts pressure on the joints, and your hips and knees bear most of it and are susceptible to strain and stress. For every pound of weight you gain, supposedly, you can put an additional 4 pounds of weight on your knees, and the number of people with arthritis jumps to more than 1 in 3 among obese people. If you have trauma or injury, it can trigger the process of breakdown. Overuse, like repetitive movements for many years, like overtraining and exercise and not resting between exercise, are risk factors. There are infections that can give you arthritis. Salmonella, Shigella, which are from food poisoning, chlamydia and gonorrhea. And I don't know why tick-borne illness is not here in this list, but it should be. Oh my God, it should be. And then rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune disease, and it attacks your healthy joint tissue. And it can be in reaction to gut problems like leaky gut or food allergies. And you may have less inflammatory arthritis if you figure out your food intolerances. There are other medical conditions like gout, which causes uric acid buildup in joints. Rheumatoid and psoriatic arthritis are inflammatory, and they are in the autoimmune realm. And the conventional treatments for these things might be analgesics like opioids, which we try not to use, and then NSAIDs like your diclofenac and your ibuprofen, and also over-the-counter drugs like acetaminophen, which is not anti-inflammatory, it's an analgesic. So remember, it's the number one cause of disability in the U.S. According to the CDC, more than 58.5 million Americans have it, which is 1 in 4 people over 18. And the most common type is osteoarthritis, because everybody moves and everybody overuses and everybody has joint degeneration of some at some level. About 50% of U.S. adults who are over 65 report having a diagnosis of arthritis from their doctors. It doesn't just impact older groups. Symptoms of arthritis are joint pain, inflammation, swelling, stiffness, and some of the most impacted joints are the low back, hips, knees, feet, neck, fingers, and thumb base. No concrete cause for all causes of arthritis. So if you came to me, I would talk to you about what might be going on in your life and how we could manage it with you. And it's according to Dr. Axe, and we'll talk about this more next week, are the best treatments for it are maintaining a healthy weight, eating a good, nice anti-inflammatory diet with lots of fruits and vegetables and clean protein, nuts and seeds if you tolerate them, and, you know, calming down your consumption of excess carbohydrates. Don't drink too much alcohol. Don't eat too much sugar. Don't eat too much processed food. Getting chiropractic care and or acupuncture and or massage. Taking proteolytic enzymes, consuming ginger and turmeric, and using Boswellia essential oil. I gotta use the Boswellia. I have it. I just haven't been using it. Silly me. Okay, so those are all good things you can do to help you with osteoarthritis. All right, and it's such an important topic that I've been talking about it for a number of weeks. So I think what I'm going to do is talk about what things that you can do. Now, general yoga and general Tai Chi are going to be helpful because, you know, I have osteoarthritis in both of my knees. I have spondylosis in my lumbar spine, so I have joint degeneration in my lumbar spine. I probably have some in my neck, although I have not had an x-ray of my neck. But the worst spot is my lumbar spine where I have the spondylosis. And then I have bone on bone for both femurs on my patellas. And right now I'm doing pretty well, I must say. And you know, I'm getting a lot of exercise that can be helpful. So I'm doing, my orthopedist said, ride your bike. So I'm doing that and I have minimal pain right now. I do brace my right knee, which has the more pain than the left knee. So I brace it when I'm exercising. I don't brace it when I'm not right now, unless I have a lot of, like I'm having a flare and I haven't had a flare in a while. And I have to wonder if the flares are related to the tick-borne illness. And right now I've got a pretty good grip on the tick-borne illness. I'm still taking the herbs to help with the Lyme disease and possible BAB and babesiosis and Bartonella. So I think that's calmed down. But I think Lyme, in terms of joint pain, Lyme is the worst one. It loves joints. And it loves to break down your hyaluronic acid, which is why getting some on there. And that's something I could consider because Dr. Zach said that one of the things I could do is get hyaluronic acid injections if I wanted to. I'm not going to do that unless I have a really bad flare. I'm not going to get injections unless I get a really bad flare. But he said, get your knees really strong. And so how do I get my knees strong? He didn't give me specific exercises, but that's okay because those are easy to find. If I really wanted to go and have another session with Nice Mary at Select, she would show me more knee exercises. And she did show me some when I was there, the clamshells and monster walks, which Ron finds very entertaining.
It's the way you do them.
I haven't been doing them so much lately, but I will probably start them again at some point. And so cycling and doing specific exercises, which you can find on YouTube, but look up clamshells, look up monster walks, one-legged deadlifts, and also wall leg lifts can all be helpful as arthritis exercises for your knees. And then yoga in general, I really recommend doing regular yoga. If you still can get up off the floor, start a practice of yoga, and you don't need to do it every day. And you don't need to do it for a full hour at a pop. If you did 10 minutes of sun salutations, that would help you to get up and down off the floor. Tai Chi is great too. And the neat thing about Tai Chi is there's no sitting on the floor. It's all standing. So that Tai Chi and Qigong are both that way. But Tai Chi, there's a lot of movement and it makes your body and your legs really strong. But the nice thing about yoga is you're forced to get up and down off the floor, which helps with both your balance. I thought it was key for helping my orthostatic intolerance from the Lyme and from the vaccine injury. And it also helps me to get up and down off the floor with the arthritis that I have. All right, we got to go because it's time, right? You've been listening to Radio Naturopath, a talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND, and also at my YouTube channel, which is Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM. WHUS stores and WHUS.org.